Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, March 30th, 2017. Aid agencies are dropping food in parts of Jonglei State.
We currently drop food just a bit further northeast of Unity, of Leer, what I spoke before, in the Jonglei region. We also pay now particular attention to the very south of the counties, the Equatorias. We have seen a lot of conflict, a lot of displacement.
And a senior church leader in Torit says there is a total breakdown in law and order.
Now, if people are disappearing, are killed, and you don't know, ask the police, ask the head of police. He should be here in this gallery here, and we want to know, you police, you are the chair of law and order here. Why our people are disappearing? Why have they been killed?
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. As the humanitarian crisis in South Sudan worsens, International Committee of the Red Cross has been airdropping emergency food supplies. The food aid is being delivered to several locations affected by both famine and conflict. Reg Eglan is the head of the ICRC delegation to South Sudan. He says the airdrops has been planned for the past year as the situation deteriorated from Juba. He spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapo about the airdrops.
We target mainly people displaced by the conflict. This is our main focus. People had to flee their homes, had to run away. We assist these people. We have a huge setup here in South Sudan. We employ about 1,000 people. We operate 10 aircraft, cargo aircraft, passenger aircraft, 2 helicopters to run these operations. Food drops is one part of this. We do food drops into these remote areas that are inaccessible by road. That means cargo airplanes overfly these villages. They drop food to identify drop zone. And people on the ground then organize communities and distribution so food goes to the right people.
Where are these drops taking place? Can you give me a few of the regions or the towns where you're dropping these supplies?
Yep. Just a couple of weeks ago, we were very much present and working in this place called Unity, Leer. That was a place we had been working for a long period of time. At the same time, this is a very difficult place, so we had to evacuate our teams there repeatedly over the last 2 years. And we had actually been assisting about 60,000 people just last month with food rations. We are not alone here. We work with others. We coordinate with others. WFP is also one of the big players, and they also assist in the same region now, and we have kind of shared the workload, and they do part of it in this particular part of the county, which is seen as a bit center of these food needs. Yeah. There are other places with equal needs. We currently drop food just a bit further northeast of Unity, of Leer, what I spoke before, in the Jonglei region, that accommodates a lot of displaced people coming from Malakal, which is a town further up north in the Upper Nile. We also pay now particular attention to the very south of the counties, the Equatorias. We have seen a lot of conflict, a lot of displacement in this part. The needs are slightly different there because people have gone to Uganda, have gone to the DRC. They're refugees, but the remaining people, they have needs, and we try to address them there.
What happens once the food is airdropped? Are there people on the ground to help distribute it?
That's a very good question. Actually, before the airdrop can take place, we send people in. We cannot just go there blindly, if you want. We first establish a relationship with the communities, with the authorities on the ground. We organize the communities. We establish lists of beneficiaries. We agree on those lists with the community leaders. And only once this is done, we call in the airplanes for the food drops. Once the food is dropped in these drop zones, we have groups of people going in, often volunteers from the local Red Cross. They go in, pile up those food stocks, and then distribution takes place to the individual families.
Would you tell us what type of food aid is being airdropped? What's in those packages?
The bulk of the food is sorghum. This is staple food here. And also beans. These are the two main groups to cover the basic needs in terms of protein and carbohydrates. And then we have supplements depending a bit on the region. Sometimes they have very specific foods that is helping mother and their small children to cope better. And then also we add oil, we add salt, sugar, depending a bit on the context. And some of the stuff cannot be dropped from the air. So some of the stuff we have to fly in with smaller aircraft, which we land in these villages and add them to the distribution.
Now, airdrops are very, very expensive. How much is this operation costing?
We have a budget and an appeal out in the range of $130 million. So that is actually for our entire operation for 2017 here in South Sudan. In this type of environment operation, the logistics cost and the cost to operate these very expensive aircraft are very high. And so we have really to ask for more funds to be able to cover that. And people have to understand it is not an easy go. It is costly, but if you want to be effective, you have to have these means at your disposal.
Do you have any idea how long you can maintain these airdrops? Do you have a timetable?
We adapt our response depending how the situation evolves. Now we are in this acute crisis situation, hence we added more of these capacities for food drops. And we actually hope that we can start phasing out once the harvest comes in. The rains start slowly, slowly now. We hope the agriculture season will be favorable, that people can plant. And most importantly, we hope, of course, for more stability and the peace to come so people can actually cope better and face their lives better. Then we can change our efforts instead of doing these expensive food drops and then focus more on the support of agriculture production, of livestock health, of the health as such for the people, and do more development-oriented programming.
Jörg Egeland is the head of the International Committee of the Red Cross Delegation to South Sudan. From Juba, he spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua. Residents and church leaders in the Imatong state capital, Torit, say there is no law and order. Police officials accuse the military of killing civilians and say there's nothing the police can do about it. Residents say people are being dragged from their homes and killed. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Torit.
Religious leaders and citizens were speaking yesterday at the start of a two-day Torit Town Peace Forum organized by the Imatong State Peace Commission. Many participants say at least more than 12 people have been taken from their homes and killed by people in military uniform. A resident who prefers to be known only as Gabriel for fear of retribution from authorities says two of his relatives were killed last month and their bodies dumped in one of Torit's neighborhoods. He says he believes they were killed by government security operatives.
These boys went missing on the 9th of February and we were searching for them only to find them dead. They were tied, shot and thrown in the bus.
Eddie William Ponciano is the former Torit town mayor. Speaking in Arabic, Ponciano admits people have been disappearing from their homes. He says people traveling from rural areas to town have also been killed on the way.
You find somebody coming from Chagare to Torit goes missing and somebody coming from Loronyo to Torit goes missing. Why should we kill them? This is unbecoming. We must know these are the few who survive from the Arabs' bullets and we should not finish them.
Monsignor Thomas Oliha, the apostolic administrator of the Torit Catholic Diocese, facilitated the peace forum. Monsignor Oliha says police are not doing enough to protect civilians.
They are people of order and law. Now, if people are disappearing, if people have been killed and the police does not know anything, what is the work of a police here? What is his own work? It's to put order, no? In town. Now, if people are disappearing, are killed, and we don't know, ask the police, ask the head of police. He should be here in this gallery here, and we ought to know. You police, you are in charge of law and order here. Why our people are disappearing? Why are they being killed? Why? What is the matter?
Torit police acknowledge security operatives have killed civilians, but say those cases are beyond the police mandate, especially those involving the military. A police officer at the central unit in Torit town who did not want his name used because he is not authorized to speak on behalf of the police says police have found several bodies dumped in a Torit suburb over the past year. He says most of the killings are carried out by the military.
That accident happened. Even a bodyguard of the governor was shot. And then another one of EPI director here was shot. And some people were beaten. And some these two Mundare were kicked and been killed. Yeah, I think this atrocity is all. It was by the commander of the army, who made those things. Yeah, that was the one to make an investigation. But I think up to now, how can you investigate the military? The military, the one who are doing this, and nobody now to investigate them.
Imotong State Acting Police Commissioner Brigadier Chiran Machar says police do not have authority over military operations.
Any military operation, police is not my concern. Over the world, military operation is not concerning about police issue. All over the world.
Civil servants also complained about not being paid their salaries. A resident who spoke on condition of anonymity for fear of retribution says a majority of South Sudanese soldiers lived under harsh conditions, something that forces them to behave in a rugged manner.
These soldiers, I see them carrying firewood. They are really suffering. The government should be paying soldiers' salaries on time and should provide them with food. You cannot send a soldier to the front line without food, and that is why they use their guns to get anything by force. We are a country and we should not behave like gorillas.
Santo Dominic, the SPLA deputy spokesperson, says he cannot deny or confirm reports that some soldiers are involved in killing, harassing, or robbing civilians. Dominic says delays in paying salaries affects all government employees, including the army, but that does not excuse crimes committed by soldiers. Imotongi State Governor Tobielo Alberio says all the concerns raised during the forum will be presented at the National Dialogue. President Salva Kiir, when announcing the National Dialogue late last year, said it would begin sometime in early March. The date has yet to be announced. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
From Torit, we will move to Yei River State, where officials accused an armed group of operating in Kejikeji of abducting 9 inmates from Kejikeji County Prison. SPLA-IO Deputy Military Spokesman confirms his group abducted government forces guarding the prison and freed inmates. The government and the armed group both claim to be in control of Kejikeji County headquarters. The claims cannot be independently verified. Tito Justin has the story for VOA from Juba.
Yei River State Governor David Lokonga Moses says the rebel group attacked the Kejikeji prison headquarters over the weekend. After government forces exchanged gunfire with the armed group, Governor Lokonga says the rebels managed to free the inmates and went with the others.
They were targeting the inmates. They came and went to the prison, and they were able to free these prisons. And when the prison warders retaliated and they started running in disarray with these people, these are those who are convicted. These are convicted with the crimes and so on. They started running away.
Lokonga says government soldiers pursued the rebels but could not catch up with the gunmen. He insists that government forces are in full control of Kejikeji County headquarters.
Kejikeji is in the full control of our SPLA forces. Of course, what I'm telling you is there is nothing called controlling Kejikeji. This is unfounded. The police, the commissioners are there, the WhatsApp and the fire brigade, all of them are there.
Lokonga says government forces in Yei River State are respecting the ceasefire President Salva Kiir declared last year, and that government forces only fight back in self-defense. He describes what's happening in his state as confusion at a time, he says, the civilian population is yearning for peace.
And if these people of Kejikeji, they are crazy with the blood of the people of South Sudan, I think one day will be brought in the book. Because what they are doing is contrary to what the government is doing, what the people of South Sudan are thinking, talking of peace. The government is not ready to carry offensives against them because the innocent people will suffer. And these people are hiding at the borders of Uganda and South Sudan.
SPLA-IO Deputy Military Spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Lampaul Gabriel confirms his group clashed with government forces earlier this week. He says the rebels did not take any inmates with them but captured SPLA soldiers as soldiers of war. Gabriel also claims that the SPLA-IO controls Kajukeji County headquarters.
We clashed with them, they ran, they took off. We released 12 prisoners of war, that is true. And also at the same time, we captured 9 of them alive. And they're here with us at the moment in our barracks. Since then, after today, Kajukeji is still in our control.
Gabriel says the SPLA-IO does not want to fight, but will always act in self-defense whenever attacked.
From the opposition side, we, the SPLA-IO, we really want peace. We don't want to continue making the civilians suffer, because we know as long as the gun continue roaring, the civilians continue suffering. The American say we are not on the aggression. It is them attacking us every single time and every single day attacking us, our bases.
South Sudan in Focus tried to reach church leaders and civil society activists in Kajukeji for comments on this story, but they are not reachable since mobile networks in the area are not operating. In January, authorities in Kajukeji blamed rebels loyal to Machar for killing 2 policemen when the armed group attacked a police station in the area. Since then, thousands of residents fled to neighboring Uganda to seek refuge. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a university employee strike paralyzes activities for students. We'll bring you more details after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
are you more of a leader or a follower?
I would say I'm more of a leader, because in most places I find myself as a team leader. I inspire people through what I do.
I'm more of a follower, but sometimes I act as a leader.
In this question, I'm a follower, because I don't like to be like a leader in a specific group. I just want to be bring my level down, to be with everyone.
I'm both. I'm a leader, but in order to be a good leader, you have to follow first. Because we don't all start out as leaders. So I start out following a leader, and I have to respect that leader. Because one day when I become a leader, that you also have to make people follow you. So you have to respect other people's leadership.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The government of Sudan and the United Kingdom say they will work together to achieve peace with Sudanese rebels, improve Sudan's human rights record, and provide humanitarian assistance to South Sudanese. Diplomats from both countries spoke to reporters last night at the end of a visit by British diplomats to Sudan. Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Abdul Ghani Naim, Undersecretary at the Sudanese Foreign Affairs Ministry, says in Arabic he met with representatives from the British Ministries of Defence, Trade and Immigration, as well as with British human rights experts. He says the agenda consisted of discussing bilateral relations and how to develop them in all aspects. We also reviewed internal issues to do with peace, security and conflict resolution in Sudan. He further says, then we discussed peace and security in the region, which includes South Sudan and other countries. Ambassador Neil Wigan, who headed the visiting British delegation, says regional security was one of the most important issues under discussion.
We are deeply concerned by the humanitarian situation in South Sudan and the risk of real catastrophe. We strongly welcome Sudan's constructive engagement at the regional level and with the government of South Sudan to try to improve the situation. And we particularly welcome the government of Sudan's decision to open up a humanitarian corridor across the border to allow humanitarian supplies into South Sudan, which will literally be saving lives. And as I understand it, goods are being loaded onto trucks already today to do that.
Wigan says his government will work with Sudan to increase the level of humanitarian assistance the country provides to South Sudan. Sudan President Omar al-Bashir appointed a high-level committee, which is headed by Sudan's former president, Abdurrahman Suar al-Dahab, to work with national and international organizations to mobilize humanitarian support and oversee the delivery of food and healthcare equipment to South Sudan. Naim says the British delegation also raised concerns about political detainees in Sudan and the need for Sudan to fully implement the International Convention Against Torture. Naim says the UK is taking a positive approach toward improving Sudan's human rights record and says his government will cooperate with the British human rights experts. Speaking in Arabic, he says, "We will be working with the UK as a country that has an important seat both at the Security Council and at the Human Rights Council. We agreed to engage with them constructively, where we can point out our problems but also how to solve them." He says, "We also agreed to prioritize development and the realization of peace as the most important human rights." Wigan says, "The head of the UK's Human Rights Department in the Foreign Ministry had a fruitful discussion with his Sudanese counterpart about ongoing human rights abuses by the government of Sudan."
They discussed some issues, including detainees, but more importantly, we also discussed concrete ways which we can work together. And our Sudanese colleagues asked for some support in some specific areas where we can help the government of Sudan, for example, in the implementation of the Convention Against Torture.
Khartoum-based human rights lawyer Saleh Mahmoud says, "Unless a permanent ceasefire is fully implemented in Darfur, South Kordofan and Blue Nile states, human rights violations against civilians in these areas, including bombings and rape, will continue."
There is no any improvement regarding human rights in the country. This is because of very obvious reasons. One of them is that because of the war in the three areas of conflict, ongoing conflict, it's natural that there would be always violations happening on a daily basis.
Wigan says the British government encouraged the government of Sudan and rebel groups operating in Darfur, South Kordofan and Blue Nile states to engage in constructive dialogue to achieve a permanent cessation of hostilities. He says another issue of great concern to his government is terrorism and the important role Sudan plays in the flow of illegal immigrants to Europe, noting that many Ethiopian and Eritrean refugees pass through Sudan and Libya on their way to Europe.
This is a shared threat, it's not a one-way exchange. So we talked particularly around countering violent extremism, where the UK has a certain experience, but also Sudan has developed certain techniques and approaches, and we're very interested in a dialogue with Sudan about how that has been approached.
Mahmoud says another issue that the government of Sudan needs to change is the laws that allow security operatives to violate political and social freedoms, including freedom of expression and the arbitrary arrests of journalists and human rights activists with impunity. He says such laws should be repealed. The visiting British delegation says there will be more cooperation with the government of Sudan on trade and education over the coming months. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we move to Wau, where employees of the University of Bahr el-Ghazal are on strike. The workers are demanding back payment of transport and medical allowances for the past 3 months. The employees say they want the government to implement a new salary structure agreed to a year ago. University authorities are pleading with the striking employees to hold talks with the administration. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
Martin Madol Arom, an executive member of Bahr el-Ghazal University Workers Union, says the government agreed to a new salary structure for all South Sudan's 5 public universities in May last year. Speaking in Arabic, Madol says since then, Bahr el-Ghazal University employees have waited patiently for their higher salaries and allowances to show up in their paychecks.
We have been waiting for medical allowances since last year, and we know that this money is available, but they are not able to pay us. We just need our money. We are going to give them 2 days within which they should pay us.
Tilar Agog, a mechanic at the university, says employees want authority to start paying their salaries according to the new scale. Speaking in Arabic, Agog says university employees are unable to take care of their families. They say They cannot pay for food and other items because of the skyrocketing prices.
The university is for all of us, starting from the vice-chancellor up the least worker. The allowances were given teaching staff and postgraduate staff, but ours was not given to us. They stopped paying our transport allowances since January. That is why we decided to go on strike, because these are our rights.
Workers shut down offices, lecture halls, and the university's main entrance, halting all activities at the university. Samson Wasara, the university vice-chancellor, says he was caught off guard by the employees' decision to strike on Monday.
The main aim for the union is equally to negotiate what they call collective bargaining. So they have not exhausted this. And they go straight forward to strike. And not only actually a normal strike, but closing the government institutions. And that is itself is a crime. And preventing equally students from hearing now, even from going to campus.
Members of the university administration have been unable to access their offices this week. Wasara wonders how employees expect to hold talks if they lock down all campus offices. He says the new salary structure must be implemented by the education ministry in Juba. But the striking employees say the problem lies within the Bahar Ghazal University administration, saying employees in the other four public universities are being paid the higher salaries. Wasara says he will take up the issues with the state authorities.
So as it has happened now, then we shall actually look also to go to see the governor and then the security organs actually about this issue, because you cannot close government institution.
Fourth-year medical student Sarah Awin Joseph says she has not had any lecture for the past 3 days. Speaking in Arabic, she urged administration officials to resolve the issues with the employees.
Now we don't have water in the hostel, and the place is not cleaned. For the past days and moreover, our lecturers are not able to get into the main campus because the main gate and the halls are closed.
Lino Angui, a second-year economic student, says all university activities have ground to a halt due to the strike.
We have nowhere to be taught since they are working hand in hand and everything is in their control. Now, the security in the university is not yet known because some of us are standing outside, our motorcycles, bicycles are outside, whereby each and everyone also is fearing maybe somebody can come and pick your means of mobility.
Employees receive a transport allowance that ranges between 500 to 2,000 South Sudanese pounds per month. The University of Bahar al-Ghazal has more than 800 employees. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song No More War by Russ Corby.
Just checking up the global scene all over the world right now, seeing Rasta cities. We need a global love, you know, and a global solution, and must be a conclusion. Joe! Rastafari, just stop the war. No more war in Africa, the people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in the Middle East, the people are fighting the peace. No more war in America, the people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in Asia, we gotta keep it nice and neat, y'all. Our people suffering around the world today, they're trying to find a solution. We look around and nowhere to hide, not even a single place to run. How can you say you're leading the world without love? So how can you say you're leading the world without peace? Circumstances meet people along the way, they need someone to turn to. Only Jah has the solution, no mankind has it on his own. We were created in the image and the likeness of Jah. Mankind, don't try to fool yourself. Wake up in the morning, you see the sun now.
We have been listening to Russ Corby with his popular song, No More War. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
In the Middle East, the people are fighting the peace. No more war. in America. The people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in Asia.